my job was to call the sex, and I couldn't quite tell what it was. And I screamed, and I was like, it's a, and the nurses were like, girl, and there we go. So.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
This week's The Art of Fatherhood podcast is being brought to you by TilePix. How many great photos and memories do you have on your smartphone? When was the last time you put one of those photos into a frame to put into your home? Many of us just don't have the time or the right equipment to make those pictures look right. Thankfully, TilePix came up with a way to help you take your photos from your phone and display them into your home. TilePix has an amazing app and website that allows you to select photos from your phone and computer and put them into beautiful frames that are made right here in the USA. You can display photos in a traditional way or create an artistic design using their split pick setting. The frames are easy to mount on the wall since there are no nails needed. There's a magnetic pad that takes away any use of tape and nails that could damage your walls. TilePix is great for Mother's Day, Father's Day, every other holiday, or just because. Your first order is 50% off. You can either have them shipped to your house or you can get them the same day that you order by visiting your local Walgreens. For more information and to get started, make sure you go to TilePix.com. What's going on, everyone? Art Eddy here for the Art of Fatherhood podcast, and on the line, very happy to have Steve Messler. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me, Steve. How you doing, sir?
Doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on. Excited to chat.
Yeah, man. Looking forward to our chat. We're going to be talking about winning Olympic gold. We're going to talk about classroom champions, but of course, I like bringing guys like yourself on to talk about their fatherhood journey. So, if people follow you on social media, they can tell that you're definitely a cool girl dad. You're all in it, and I love it. I got two daughters, so I'm in that girl dad mentality as well. But take me back when you found out you were going to be a dad. What was going through your mind, sir?
We'd been trying, and for us, it was our first try was Brett, who wound up being our daughter that was born. And we actually didn't know. We went through the, we're not going to find out what we have kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we're going to like, you know what, how many surprises like that do you get in life anymore? So we waited. I mean, I think the day that I found out, it was amazing. I mean, I still remember the moment, like probably many of us do, right? I mean, I was in our bedroom and my wife comes out with it and, you know, there it is. And that was a pretty incredible moment. And then I still will obviously never forget, but the moment she was born, I was the one that was going to be calling the sex of the baby and never been there before. Right. Like, you know, as a guy, you don't tend to like watch YouTube videos about this stuff. So it happens and out comes this, you know, amazing human who was covered in gook and swollen and umbilical cord and, you know, a bunch of a big, you know, big team of doctors and nurses. And my job was to call the sex. And I couldn't quite tell what it was. And I screamed and I was like, it's a, and the nurses were like, girl, and there we go. So.
That's fantastic. The mentality, like you said, like we're not, you know, searching up, like you said, YouTube videos or being like, how to tell if it's a boy or a girl if you, you know, without the ultrasound
and
all that stuff. So that's fantastic.
It was a classic guy dad move of the like, how hard could it possibly be? You know?
Yeah.
Turns out it's harder than I thought it would be.
Yeah, because when that baby comes out and you're just like you, I remember like, do you want to cut the umbilical cord? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, what's that going to be like? You know, is it like going to be cutting like some like, you know, Twizzlers or is it going to be a little bit harder?
Yeah.
Like what's the consistency of that? That's what you're going through your mind. And you're like helping your, you know, your spouse like breathe and she's telling you to shut up because she's got that locked already. So
exactly. Right. Like, I mean, there's many things you can do. Most of them fall under the wrong thing.
Exactly. But, you know, especially for you with, you know, the core values, obviously being an Olympic gold medalist champion and all that and everything that goes into training for that. And of course, paying it forward with classroom champions. So hard work, dedication and paying it forward are things that she's going to see just by your actions. So talk about some of the other values you're looking to instill into her.
Such an interesting question, given the path that I've had in my life, you know, having been like a national champion when I was in high school and then, you know, having a lot of success and a lot of failures through my athletic career that culminated in the success that I would have always dreamt about when I was a kid to win an Olympic gold medal. And then to watch things in her. And I think I'm of two minds, right? I'm of one mind where I see her do things. Now we were out skiing this past weekend. I live in Calgary, Canada, where, you know, Saturday morning we were out skiing you know, a beautiful day. Saturday afternoon, we were back in the city, and she was jumping through the, you know, water, like a sprinkler, in 75 degree sun. And then Sunday morning, she was out building snowmen because it snowed 3 inches overnight. And I see in her this like innate athletic ability for sure. I'm fortunate to have excelled in sport, so I don't have that thing hanging over me where, you know, a lot of folks, a lot of parents, you know, wind up in a situation they feel like, you know, I didn't quite do it, but I can really help. I know where I went wrong, and I can help my child not make those mistakes so that they can be successful. You know, I have the fortunate situation of not having to carry that baggage, and it's just baggage, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. So when it comes to things I want to instill in her, I think to me, my favorite word for her is yet. And, you know, whether she doesn't like a food yet, or she can't ski that mountain yet, or she can't, you know, or she can't, whatever it is yet. And I think we hear that in her all the time. Whenever I hear that in her, that's when I like, you know, you have these little parenting checklists. Like, am I doing a, you know, especially as an athlete, like, am I doing a good job or am I doing a bad job?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's plenty of situations where you're like, ooh, I probably should have handled that better. But whenever I hear her say the word yet, which indicates like a growth mindset, it means that just because I can't do it now doesn't mean I'm not going to be able to do it tomorrow, or I can't learn it, or I can't practice it. So I think ultimately that was the thing that always made me successful, whether it was sport or whether it was, you know, building a business or anything like that. And that's the neatest thing to see coming through in her already at 3.5 or going on 4.
So many great things to respond to, Steve, what you said right there. The first and foremost is you were saying, like, okay, because you achieved what you wanted to do in sports, you're like, I'm not going to put my baggage on her, right? It always harkens back when I talk to an athlete or someone who gives the advice, where like, I'm not going to push my interests or my sports onto my kids, right? It goes back to that Varsity Blues, you know, James Vanderbeek, I don't want your life, like moment.
Yep.
But the fact that you put it away where it was like, you know, I don't need to do that. Sometimes parents get caught up, I could have done this or I could have done that. Like you said, like, I know where I went wrong, but it's like, all right, you have that mentality, and that's great. I love that.
It's all positive things, right?
Yeah.
It's for most people, it's just positive things. And, you know, I look at this kid and I'm like, I've talked to other Olympians and Olympic medalists and Super Bowl champions with this thing too, which is, how do you help them? You know, this, you know, she's going to be on the soccer field, and either she's going to succeed and, you know, her friends will get in the car with their parents and, you know, maybe the friend's parents will say something along the lines of like, well, you know, her dad's a gold medalist, so of course she's going to do that. Or she's going to lose and the friends will get in the car with the parents and the parents will say, hey, you beat that kid who's, you know, has a, you know, an advantage because her dad is an Olympic gold medalist. And I feel like she's, you know, where do you find that? That's the thing that worries me the most. Like, where do you find that balance for them so that they can just be their own person?
Yeah, you mentioned like the soccer field. I remember I was interviewing some members from the USA women's soccer team a few years back, and we were talking. She was coaching her daughter, and we were talking about like how parents like come in and like try and coach their kids during a timeout when they're not even a coach. And I was just like, and one of them said to me like, "Yeah, parents be like, hey, make sure blah 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 goes here," and I'm like, you won the World Cup, and yet they're telling you how to coach soccer. That it never ends.
I can imagine. And, so, again, like, we're all just trying. Like, that's what I realized once you have kids, you realize I'm just trying to do what I think is best for them.
Yeah.
And like, you know, even that parent is just trying their best. Like, and it may be misguided, it may be whatever, but ultimately, you know, you have to look at those things with the glasses half full, because otherwise, you know, you drive yourself crazy, I'm sure, as a coach like that.
You took the words right out of my mouth, man. Steve, you have that glasses full mentality. And one more thing before I get into my next few questions about fatherhood. I love the fact that, you know, especially an athlete, how you're like, you know, how am I doing as a parent and all that stuff? Just because of the Olympics, like, you're not having reporters, you know, especially like from NBC Sports, critiquing like, well, you know, she was eating dinner and you let her not eat all of the chicken on her plate. So I think maybe next time you got to go back in there, review the tape and see how you guys can, you know, do a little bit better, right? You're not going to get that.
Uh-huh. I mean, I would love that sometimes, though. Unfortunately, that often comes from my wife, and it doesn't get digested as well by me as the NBC reporter did.
It's funny how that happens, though, because, I mean, whether it's probably your wife, if you say something to her, then for me and my family, like my wife and I will look at each other and she'll be like, oh, they just agree because you're the fun one. And I'm like, well, out of the two, I might make more jokes, but I'm the sheriff and a little bit more lax with you. And she's like, oh, yeah, you're probably right. So you always have that going back and forth with your spouse. I think it's funny. Just as like we always think like we have the answers because we're parents, and we always thought our parents maybe had the answers. But as you get older, it's like, no, you're kind of, you know, just trusting your instincts and all that. But what is something that your daughter has taught you about yourself, about life in general?
So much at this point at, you know, 3.5 years old.
Yeah.
She, I mean, you know, a few things. I mean, there's the things you hear about parenthood before you get there, and then they just either are substantiated or you're like, no, that's wrong. I mean, I think one of the things that was substantiated for me was that you realize how little control you actually have. You know, they're in charge in a lot of ways. And ultimately they're in charge of themselves as well. They should be, like, they're in charge of themselves. Mm-hmm. And yes, you're guiding them, but if they don't want to go, it's going to take a little longer to get them going. So you have to find ways to work with them to get them to want to go, as opposed to just, you know, well, we have to go now because I say so. And, you know, I've really worked hard, especially, you know, I mean, I lead an organization. I sit on the board for the Olympic Committee and Paralympic Committee. I'm in these roles where, you know, you have general opportunities to have people listen to the things you'd like to do.
Yeah.
But your 3.5-year-old could care less. And I think that's a really, really fantastic, way to do it. And also just what's so much fun is, like, to me, again, for me, watching her do sports, like watching her on this ski hill where she's 3.5 and this kid is already going down blue runs, and, you know, her favorite thing are moguls. And I think ultimately what that has reminded me, whether it's a teaching moment for me or whether it's just reminding me that, like, doing hard things are fun, and doing things that you're really not sure if you can do is fun.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing that can happen is you just won't do it.
Yeah.
And the best thing that can happen is you will.
Oh, I love it, Steven. One more question before we start talking about the Olympics and classroom champions. And I think you're in this, I think you're perfect for this because you're right there. You know, your daughter's 3.5. Well, just I always love asking this, no matter what age the kid is or their kids are, whether even they're, you know, in college or they're even out of the nest, I always love just having one big piece of advice you'd offer to new dads. Listen to this, like someone that just found out they were a dad and, you know, instead of like reading books, now they're listening to these podcasts, right? Or if they just became a dad and they're holding their kid at home and they're like, how do dads do this, right? And if they don't have a chance to reach out to some friends, they might listen to podcasts. So a lot of people, you know, give me feedback and they appreciate this question because they always love, it's almost like a think tank for fatherhood. So what is one big piece of advice you'd offer to new dads?
That's a great question. I think the thing that I would offer to new dads is you get to be the dad, which means that you're not your dad. Mm-hmm. You're not your friends as dads. You get to do this however you want to do this. And, you know, one of the things that really struck me is my dad said to my wife at one point that, you know, he really thinks it's great that I get to be a dad at this era because I get to do things with my daughter in a way that he didn't feel like he could do back then. Mm. And, you know, I think that is ultimately, like, we only know fatherhood by what our fathers gave us. Mm. And some people don't have fathers. Some people had lousy fathers. I mean, it is a bell curve. Not all of our dads were great dads. So it's a bell curve. And maybe your dad was that one in the 99th percentile, but chances are they weren't. And it didn't mean they didn't try. It didn't mean they didn't love you. It just means that they were also, by the way, making it up as they went along with way less resources. So for me, you know, the other piece of advice is, other than, like, you get to be a dad the way you want to be a dad, is there are, like, I do look at resources. Like, you know, I do look at things out there. Because there are great blogs or podcasts like this that can give you more resources than just your instincts.
Yeah.
And we're living in a world where, you know, especially as I think about a daughter, I think about a time where I always had the mentality where I wanted to, you know, either stay in shape or have guns. One of the two, you know, because of the boys coming to her house. to our house. And that was always the joke, you know? And I always said it jokingly, but I've realized over time that that's actually a terrible way for me to think about it.
Yeah.
And my job needs to be, I don't need to be in shape and I don't need a gun because this little girl is going to be able to take care of herself.
Yes.
And I'm not going to need to be the one who's going to need to watch out for her. She's going to learn these things the hard way. She's going to learn these things the easy way. But, you know, all that, and that all that comes back down to is like just getting to be a dad the way you want to be a dad yourself.
One of the best responses, Steve, and I'm not just saying that, like, is I'm a little bit biased because I have two daughters too, where you throw out that stereotypical, like, you know, you see those, again, I think now more than ever that mindset is changing, but those t-shirts is like, you know, you want to meet my daughter, good luck or something, or no one dates my daughter until blah, blah, blah. And like, that's not putting trust in your daughter. That's not putting trust in healthy relationships at all. So,
yeah. What is that teaching her?
Yeah.
And again, it's a pride thing for a dad, right? Like it's a pride thing that I will push away and beat away with a stick all the men that try to date her. And I understand how, especially living in an athletic world where that macho attitude is just normal. It's not even considered macho. It's just straight the thing you do and say. And it really wasn't until she was born and probably a couple of years in that I really started to check myself on that. And my wife's a psychologist, and is, you know, really, really great and thoughtful at these things. And she, you know, had a couple talks with me and I listened and I, you know, she was right. And I feel like way better about thinking about how I want to help shape her, in that way. And like how much more productive of a person she'll be in life if she can just take care of herself in that way.
Spot on, Steve. And again, too, because I think you're spot on. And I just want to kind of piggyback on that comment where, like, you're getting information from your wife. You're looking at things from a different perspective, right? And I think because we care so much for our kids, in this case, our daughters, respectively, where it's like, all right, just because we had this mindset back in the day or certain things that we've seen when we experienced when we are kids, teenagers, young adults, whatever the case may be, but, like, we don't want to mess their lives up. We don't want to just like use like this is like I have blinders on and this is the way I'm going to do it. But hearing stuff from your wife, especially with the background and her knowledge and her education, right? And thinking like, what's the best for my daughter? Then you can reevaluate and things aren't set in stone. So I applaud you again for sharing that, Steve, because I think hopefully a lot of other people will, you know, be like, oh yeah, that's a good point. Maybe I shouldn't have that mentality to help my child grow, right?
I hope so. If somebody's out there, one of the guys out there listening right now that, you know, for me, a little bit of it was, you know, needing to open up for a little more of a little bit of vulnerability here, which is like, I don't have the answers. And like this thing that I've always thought because society taught it to me, maybe that's not right. Maybe that's BS.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of those topics to me where, you know, I will gladly have a conversation with another dad who feels differently about that one just to hear what they're thinking. And it doesn't mean that I'm right. It doesn't mean you're right. It just means that we get to be whatever kind of dad we want to be.
Yeah, no doubt, Stephen. Again, I really appreciate your thoughts and your perspective on your fatherhood journey. I know I'm getting a lot out of it, and I know that my audience will too. You and your teammates have some great American USA pride while winning the gold medal in the U.S. Olympics in 2010 for the four-man bobsleigh in Vancouver. Training time, preparation. You know, as a kid, sometimes you're like, oh, every 4 years, you know, it's the Olympics and all that. You don't think about all the training because it's, again, you know, basketball, football, the major sports, like the four major sports, like they're like you see them training. You have spring training, OTAs, whatever the case may be. You guys aren't worried about that because you're just training for that one moment in time for the Olympics. When you look back with all the training, the bonding with you and your partners and all that. And of course, winning the gold medal is fantastic. What stands out to you the most about that whole experience in 2010?
For me, it was always, which with what we've been talking about here, you know, should make sense to everybody. For me, it was absolutely like I enjoyed the process way more, just as much, if not more than the actual moment. And we actually do. I mean, we in the sport of bobsled, we have a World Cup season every year that brings us to 8 or 9 different tracks across the world that we'd race every weekend. So we do have a football and NFL style cadence from November through March. So we are training on an annual basis for that World Cup season and then a World Championships every year. But the Olympics and the American consciousness, the Olympics are the thing that, you know, clearly matters. So there's similar parallels to pro sports. I mean, in Germany and other places, bobsled is where it's a little more popular. There's a little bit different of an understanding there. But when it comes to the actual journey and the thing that I take away the most from the Vancouver experience. And yeah, we were the first ones in 62 years to win an Olympic gold medal. But, you know, yes, I know the Jamaicans. No, they're not very good at bobsled, but they're good guys. it's an incredible experience to do something like that, where you live in obscurity for the better part of the decade.
Yeah.
When I was, I bobsledded for the 2000s, mainly from 2000 to 2010, and retired, went to three Olympics, and went to 2002 Salt Lake City, where, the Olympics were 5 months after 9/11. And where, the first time the country got to breathe and you got to experience that. Went to Torino in 2006 and wasn't if we were going to medal, it was simply what color we were going to get. And we got seventh. And that was terrible and disappointing and depressing. And then going into Vancouver in 2010 games, we were again favorites. We had won the world championship the year before for the first time in 50 years for the Americans. And what I realized is when you get to do something like that at that level, the whole country watches, because everybody cheers for Team USA. Yeah. I'm a Buffalo Bills guy. everybody cheers for Buffalo, because how can you not cheer for Buffalo? We've never hurt anybody's feelings. But pro sports and sports that we all watch as Americans have a different context. And then the Olympics come around and everybody's cheering. So, to have been on the cover of, most newspapers, in sports sections on the Sunday morning after we won our gold medal, to the cover of Sports Illustrated, yeah, to getting to go to NASCAR races and getting to go to, military bases and ride in F-16s and meet the president, do these things. I say that because, I realized it was this huge celebration of American, the ability for Americans to step up and do something. That was the coolest part to me. To go, and we were standing there 1 week, literally 1 week to the day after we won our gold medal. My former teammate, Steve Holcomb, may he rest in peace, he and I were sitting in Atlanta at the NASCAR race, and there was a line of about 1,000 or 2,000 people. And they were waiting for hours to take pictures and sign and have us sign autographs, which is not the general experience that I was used to, mind you.
Yeah.
But it was a week after, and we had done our sled design with Jeff Bonine, who's a former NASCAR driver and Daytona winner. And Jeff and his team were huge, huge supporters. And Jeff poured tons of money into it and tons of technology. And our sleds were named after him. They were called Bodine sleds.
Nice.
And yeah, it was Bo for him. And then Chassis Dynamics, which was a guy named Bob Cuneo, who Jeff actually pulled off his NASCAR team in the 90s and put him on a bobsled. So NASCAR really felt this affinity for us, because we use their wind tunnels. And we're standing there, and this older gentleman comes up. He had to be in his 70s. And he grabs my medal, and he holds it. And then he starts telling me a story of that in 1983, he held a 1976 silver medal from this Olympics, and it was a hockey medal. And it occurred to me that at that moment, I now have this chunk of metal that I get to give to people that they will remember it for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
I think that's a really neat experience to be able to give to people.
Oh, I love it. Thank you very much for sharing that. And again, thank you for representing the USA really well by winning the gold medal for our country. And again, I kind of mentioned too, sometimes the training doesn't, go seen because you guys aren't being like, hey, look what I'm doing, right? But for an Olympic athlete for yourself, and I almost maybe it could be the fact that, you said you were supposed to place in 2006 and you came in, obviously not winning a medal. But for you, what was maybe the biggest hurdle as an Olympic athlete that you wouldn't mind sharing with us? Just for you personally. I know it's different for every athlete, but for you as an Olympic athlete, what was maybe the biggest hurdle or just the biggest thing you had to overcome with your training and just everything in competing?
I mean, I think for me, ultimately, it was just I wasn't the most talented athlete. I was successful on the way, but I kind of ran out of natural talent right around 12 or 13 years old, where I started to have to train and work hard and do those things. So I think just overcoming not being the strongest, I was one of the faster guys out there on the bobsled team, but not being the strongest, I had tons of injuries in college and I had to completely change my mindset. I was hurt for 5 years in a row and, I had to have Tommy John elbow surgery at the end of my college career, and being able to understand how to flip the switch and go from being a very fragile track athlete that won a national championship in senior year in high school and then literally didn't finish my season, my entire college career at University of Florida, uninjured for all four seasons. And then having to come out and go into a sport like bobsled, where it's way harder on your body than track and field. Like, you're in a blender, you're in a football game blender for 60 seconds at a time going down these bobsled tracks. And then you got to go up and do it again, all in the cold, all in the snow. And I couldn't stay healthy in a place like University of Florida in Gainesville, where you had a dozen support staff who were there just to support me.
Yeah.
And then I entered into that world where no one was supporting me until I actually made a team. So overcoming that, like, I had no problem with the hard work. I had no problem with the discipline and the dedication. I had no problem. I moved to Canada where, you know, I lived in a basement suite and, like, kind of half borrowed slash bought my, you know, one of the Canadian guy's, you know, car. Or actually it was his girlfriend's, like, Mercury Topaz. And I was living off of, like, a hot plate in a basement suite with a kid who would run around every day upstairs and wake up the teammate that was there training with me. All those things, loved it. I loved it. Like, the stuff that people think of the hard part, the journey, that sacrifice, that was, like, instinctual to me. Like, I, like, you know, leapt at that stuff. But ultimately it was needing to overcome, like, the fragility that my body was, and just realize that I could control that with my mind, and I it needed to start with me and my, you know, my decisions that I made.
Appreciate the honesty. And again, you know, this is something that you can share with your daughter and just say that you got to have that don't give up mindset, but there's going to be things that are going to be in your mind that are going to weigh you down, right? And for you to share that as an Olympic gold medal, you know, winner, and to have that mentality, and it's like all the stuff that you've overcome, because there's, you know, like you said, you're a, you know, a glass half full type of guy mentality, right? But you can acknowledge certain things that you might be tripped up on, but you're going to, like, hey, this is what I got to do. So again, I appreciate that. And another thing, paying it forward is great. And, you know, it's a great lesson that you can teach your kid. You and your sister, Lee, created the Classroom Champions organization. I love, love, love what you guys are doing there. You're looking to improve students' lives in all aspects, and especially now more than ever. I mean, if you know, we'll definitely put up links where people can go to classroomchampions.org over here at artoffatherhood.net. But, like, you have videos from athletes and just people that, you know, kids look up to, just saying, like, hey, I know this is an especially tough time with the pandemic, but hang in there, do your best. And all these things where they might sound simple to do, but it brings kids up. So thank you very much for creating Classroom Champions with your sister and the great people that, you know, over at your organization. Talk about the inspiration for starting this up, sir.
Thank you for those words. That's, I mean, so kind of you to talk about Classroom Champions in that way. It's been something that we started this back when I was an athlete and my sister was getting her PhD in education. Our parents were teachers. I was a teacher. She was a teacher. And we recognized that I would go into schools, I'd give a talk. The thing that all of us have seen and experienced, whether you're, you know, when you were a kid or your own kids or as a teacher, and these people come in, they give a, you know, great motivational talk, but that's it. And they leave and they never see those kids again. And as that person, that athlete, I was the person who the 10-year-old kid in us would have just thought led an amazing life. And we wanted to do more. We wanted to do more than just this one-off visit. We wanted to do more than just inspire. We wanted to teach and we wanted to grow relationship. And I was a tech geek. I realized that I couldn't go in and go to the same school over and over again because I was traveling the world competing. But I wanted to show kids it wasn't just 2.5 weeks of glory on television, that there was a process. Just like you had mentioned earlier, the same exact thing is how we started Classroom Champions. We want to teach kids about the process. So what Classroom Champions has turned into over the last 10 years is a nonprofit education organization that works across the U.S., across Canada, and soon eventually across the world. And we match classrooms with classrooms and entire schools and entire school districts with Olympians and Paralympians and NFL players and NHL players and NCAA student athletes. And they are teaching these kids about goal setting and perseverance and feedback. Imagine if you had a classroom of fourth graders who accepted feedback the way an athlete does. I moved to a foreign country to have my coach, Stu McMillan, who's one of the best coaches in the world, who's coached Olympic sprinters, medalists, to bobsledders, to everything else in between.
Yeah.
I moved to a foreign country to have somebody tell me what I did wrong 10 times, 30 times a day. And I loved it. Imagine if you had a classroom of fourth graders who were seeking for their teacher to tell them what they're doing wrong so they could get better.
Yeah.
That's the kind of culture change that we're trying to do at Classroom Champions. And then we provide teachers and infrastructure. So it's not just content. It is live interactions, live chats with these athletes. It's a social media and private network. So these teachers can communicate with these athletes. We provide curriculum for schools that from kindergarten to eighth grade so that they can actually bring in this, the thing, the reason why, and I would assume probably a lot of your fathers out there listening right now, a lot of you guys out there listening are going to maybe lean towards being, you know, fans of sports. Well, why do we put our kids in sports? We put our kids in sports so that they can learn how to fall down and get back up. Mm-hmm. They can learn how to be a good teammate. They can experience these things. Well, not every kid self-selects to go into to play sports. So, and we want to recognize that. So we want to bring those things in, help teachers create an environment and a culture that is that thing about sport that we really, really love. We want to provide teachers the tools because not everybody is a good goal setter. Not everybody has perseverance, especially as adults. We've been beaten down. Especially over the last year, year and a half. So to have somebody who is a teaching partner, to be able to provide the social emotional learning SEL framework, that is now becoming more popular in schools, that's been the neatest thing. And then also we provide parent resources and tools as well.
Oh, so awesome. And again, just, you know, I think we've learned, and my wife, her mom, God bless her, God rest her soul, like, she was a teacher, and you learned how much dedication a teacher puts in. Like, I'd even see her prepping over in the summer. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, what, you know, what she's doing, right? And for you guys to help schools all over is fantastic. And I think it's also great for you because, you know, I know your daughter's three, but as she gets older, you will kind of see the climate of what's going on in schools, right? And I think you are seeing it from a third person perspective where you're not a teacher, you're not a student, and you're not a parent. So you can kind of see what, well, obviously you're a parent, but like in a school zone setting where you can kind of see the forest through the trees, you can kind of see what's happening. Right. And sometimes we're so bogged down in like this email, this communication, and it's great. Like, kids, how were your day? Like, you know, instead of saying, was it good? Like, what was your favorite part of your day and why? Right. Yes. These open-ended questions. But what is something that you have done and your organization has done that you have seen that maybe as an advocate for kids in schools that parents should kind of be aware of now, just because in the sense of like, you're seeing different things that kids are going through, maybe they're not sharing with their parents. So I think you have a good perspective. I bet you got a lot of different things, but if there's one thing you'd like to hone in on that maybe parents should kind of be mindful of with their kids in school, whether they're virtual or in, you know, on campus, what is something that parents should be aware of that you have seen?
Oh, it's a fantastic question, Art. I think the number one thing that we've really realized is for parents, whether it's mom, dad, guardian, whoever it is to recognize how important you are in this kid's life. Mm. And I don't say that like, of course, you're the one putting food on the table, et cetera, but I say that in, it takes an ego to think you can make a difference for somebody else. Like, well, you know, who am I to tell this person what to do or to teach this person? And, you know, our kids amaze us all the time, right? Like we generally, and that's, you know, the beauty of evolution is that we generally, you know, perceive our kids as, you know, quote unquote, better than us. You know, we want better for them and we perceive them as that. And I think the thing that we've really focused in on at Classroom Champions is not telling people how to parent, but just reminding parents to have a role, be a role model, have a role. Don't just ask your kids questions, tell them your stories. Tell them about a time that you failed. Tell them about a time that it was hard. Like, and then ask them, you know, what was hard at school today? But, you know, don't just expect these answers. I think, you know, that's what we want our kids to, what'd you do at school today? Nothing. What'd you do school today? Nothing. you know, being able to show them that you've been in their shoes.
Yeah.
But also just, you know, being able to share with them what was hard in your day today. So ultimately, like, that's been Classroom Champions' motto the whole time, which is just, we're putting these athletes into classrooms and school cultures and, you know, communities so they can role model what it is to work hard, that there's a process to get these things. It's not necessarily that they're always going to be doing the right thing. It's that if they don't do the right thing, they're going to be the kind of person who admits that. So I think as a parent, if you can just remember, like, look, these kids, no matter how we feel about it, we have to remember that they look up to us. Yeah. And I think on a day-to-day basis, just like you said it, I think on a day-to-day basis, that's really hard. Mm. I miss that all the time. I miss it all the time that, like, because you're just there. Yeah. It's just your every day. And then sometimes you got to just remind yourself, okay, I need to talk about these things with them so they see that they can talk about their experiences, they can talk about their challenges, that I'll be here to talk to them about theirs and that they could be here to talk to me about mine.
No doubt. Great answer. Yeah, I think what you said, too, was just like, think about when you were a kid, right? Because there's certain things that we think about, mortgages, taxes, making sure that we're providing for our family, right? And if you see your kid kind of have a bad day, like, oh, what's, you know, what happened? Like, oh, so-and-so, my friend was being mean to me, and I don't know if we're going to be friends anymore. I'm like, oh, dust it off. You know, if they're truly not a friend, they're going to, you know, they weren't meant to be. You can say that answer, right? But then if you realize, mm-hmm. like, when you were their age, that meant the world to you, right? Like, that was yep. that's your friend, and you got to, so you'd be like, all right, you know, you can have that mentality, or you can be like, hey, like you said, like, talk to him, like, so what happened? Was it something that they did? Was it something you both did? Or was it you did? Like, let's kind of see how we can resolve this, right? And put yourself into, like, when you
got it.
Rage. So, love it.
Totally. And, like, I hope I can do that right most of the time. That's yeah. it. I think that's, and that's also it, right? It's like, it's very rarely are we going to have something that is going to completely screw the pooch and, like, we're going to mess them up forever.
Yeah.
Now, you know, there are certainly things we can do that and yeah. have lasting impressions. But generally on a daily basis, there, you know, we can just, it's all just like, it's an Olympic size endeavor. Like it takes a long time and we got a lot of chances to get better. So.
No doubt. And I think you, again, like kids around like ages 3 to 6, we sometimes think they're not as resilient as they are. And there's certain things where if like maybe you yelled at them or this or that, the next day they're like, hey, Dad, I want to play. Can we go do this? And I'm like, wait, you're not mad at me? Like kids really at that age really don't hold grudges unless you keep on doing it over and over again, right? But like if you had a bad day, everyone's got a bad day and you might take it out on the wrong person, right? But like you go to bed, you put them down to bed and you're like, man, I was too tough on you, right? And then the next day, like, hey, let's go play. And like, oh, okay, cool. I'm like, geez.
It is really amazing, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing how quickly, I mean, she bounced back on us the other day in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, man, like, I wish I could let go of my grudges
yes.
that quickly.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. No doubt. One more fun question before we get into the Fatherhood Quick Five, which are also fun questions. But again, you mentioned you're a Bills fan. So my mom passed away earlier in 2012, but my dad's still here. And my sisters, we all grew up in Buffalo. They were actually born in Buffalo. For some reason, they moved
oh, really?
To Indiana for me to be born, and then we moved back to Buffalo. But when we would go, and then we've moved around a lot for my dad's job, but like when we go back to Buffalo, of course the wings, yes, everybody loves it, Anchor Bar, mm-hmm. I get it. But like the pizza was great, like the way the pepperoni, there's a couple of where my grandma used to live in downtown Buffalo were great for pizza places. I love sponge candy.
That.
You're actually now living in Canada. What's your favorite food from Buffalo that you can't get now?
Oh, man. Beef on Weck.
Ah!
So Anderson's out on Sheridan Drive or up on Delaware Avenue, Beef on Weck. Mighty Taco.
Okay.
So for those of you out there who don't know Western New York, think about Taco Bell, but make it really good instead of, you know, nothing against Taco Bell. Plenty against Taco Bell. I lived off it in college, but Mighty Taco, absolutely. When I go home, those are the two places. Anderson's and Mighty Taco, those are the two places. Let alone my sister's big on the chicken finger subs there. And then, like, of course, and that's without saying, you already mentioned the wings and pizza, like Lenova wings and pizza. Those are, you know. That's a fantastic question. What's the thing you miss?
Sponge candy. I mean, I can get like that's when I used funny. To live in Maine, there was a place called Yummies that would sell like candy in the bags and all stuff. You can get sponge candy there, but like the pizza was great. And when we took my daughters to Buffalo, when they could actually like remember how things taste and all that stuff, they loved the way the pepperonis kind of like bubbled up, you know, like kind of had like little cups, and they loved it. And of course, the wings, like I said, but like it was just that, and then. Certain ice cream places, just like, I don't know, like, of course, you know, New York City gets like, oh, it's the water, the pizza and all that stuff. But there's certain things about Buffalo and the way it's situated and where it's located, like certain food tastes great. And like sponge candy is one of them because I think it's just got the weather for it. So sponge candy is mine. Really appreciate you sharing that. Fatherhood Quick Five right now. And again, maybe she, hopefully, maybe at three, she can kind of stay through a whole movie. But you guys have a favorite family movie right now?
No, she can't quite make it through that. Okay. I would say she just got into YouTube Kids,
nice.
Which I'm not sure how I feel about that yet.
Favorite family song, or is there something that you guys like to dance to as a family right now?
Yeah, favorite family song, Barbara Ann by the Beach Boys.
Oh, nice.
It was my uncle my mom's brother, who passed away from pancreatic years ago before. So Brett, my daughter never got to meet him. He was a huge Beach Boys fan. His sons, Zach and John, out there. One of the things that I like always want to do as I, and John is actually a newly expecting father as well. So I'm so proud of my cousin. But I wanted Brett to like really, my daughter to really know her uncle, and like Beach Boys is the way. So ever since she was brand new, born out of the gate, we would dance and sing to the Beach Boys.
Oh, love that, man. Again, not that many people are traveling, but you kind of mentioned it's almost like a family vacation where you went up north, started skiing, then came back down, and you went to the pool. That's like a perfect day, but like describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be for you guys?
You know, the lake house. So we have friends who have a beautiful lake house out in the interior of British Columbia. Mm. Unfortunately, they just sold it, but we did last summer. They've got a boat where we were able to do, you know, we were able to be on the water. We were able to swim. We live in the city here in Calgary, and we have the mountains out there. But the thing I miss about Buffalo and about Florida is lakes. Mm. So we don't really have many lakes here. It's all rivers and mountains by Calgary. So lake, beach house, lake, place where we can hike, a place where we can do those things.
Nice. I'm guessing this might be a Buffalo Bill, but favorite athlete when you were a kid was?
My favorite, Dan O'Brien, actually, not a Bill, but a decathlete. If you remember the Dan and Dave commercials from 92 Olympics, Dan was the guy who didn't make the Olympics. Dan went on to break the world record a few months later. He's the reason I became a decathlete, which is why I got my scholarship to Florida, went on a bobsled, yada, yada. Full circle around 2010, the Olympic team, the Americans, we have, alumni, as we like to call them, and myself included, has-beens, awesome has-beens, come and visit and come and give us, you know, talks and pump us up before we go to the games. Well, sitting there for breakfast, 2010, at the U.S. Olympic Committee's hotel, right before we were about to go to the Olympic Village in Whistler. And, you know, there's a video from, you know, President Obama at the time. There's other people. And then who is there and who comes in and punches me in my shoulder, because I've known him before, but Dan O'Brien. And then what does Dan O'Brien talk about? He talks about out there, there's going to be some kids. For him, going to the Olympics was about the Miracle on Ice. So he watched the Miracle on Ice in 1980. That inspired him. He went on to be the world's greatest athlete in decathlon. What did Dan talk about? He talked about, you never know what kids are out there watching you that you will inspire them. And here's the guy who inspired me. So it's like the circle of life moment for me, which is mind blowing.
Love it. Love it. Thanks very much for sharing that. And lastly, top three words you hope your daughter would use to describe you as a dad. What would they be?
Different. Awesome, of course. I'll go with the low hanging fruit on that one. Different, awesome, and loving. Loving is not my forte generally.
Yeah.
So I hope I can do that for her.
Well, just chatting with you, sir, I think there is a lot of love you're sending her way, and it's great. And I love the different is fantastic too, because there's no one path, right? Everyone can go their own path. So I think that's great. People, make sure you follow Steve on Twitter at Steve Messler, and also go to his website, stevemessler.org. And also, we've been talking a little bit about it, classroomchampions.org. See how maybe you can get your school involved, or just use these videos to inspire your kids' classes and all that, because they do great work there. And if there's any ways you can help them out, make sure you check out classroomchampions.org. Steve, I know I kind of took a little bit more time than I asked for, but this was great. I really appreciate your take on fatherhood and sharing, you know, your Olympic dreams and, you know, winning the gold medal and just the good stuff you do over at Classroom Champions. I wish you and your family continued success. And again, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Art, for doing this. Again, I think that, like we talked about during the talk today, right, which is these, as men, as dads, we are not necessarily always open to, you know, and open to these things, and there hasn't been the resources. So I appreciate the fact that you make this fun for us to you know, I listen to your stuff, and you make it fun for us to get to learn about things. And again, you make it not threatening, and I really appreciate the work you do, and I think it's going to be so important if we're gonna wind up with a, you know, an amazing next generation. So thank you for everything you're doing.
Thank you, man. That means a lot.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to theartoffatherhood.net.